Welcome to the Minivape Gang Podcast, episode 363. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the lovely and talented Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning, guys.
And the powerful and strong Phil Wilson.
That's me. Yes,
indeed. So, Phil, quick question.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a garage sale going on this weekend?
No, I do not.
I know. We don't either, and we're the only two guys in Lakeville without a garage sale.
I think so. This is garage sale weekend in Lakeville, everybody.
Really?
So, yes.
Yeah, there's hundreds of garage sales here.
So come on down.
That's right.
Buy our crap.
Yeah. Well, Phil, you but probably put all your old purses in there, right?
It's true.
Get rid of them?
Yeah. Right. And my pumps.
And your pumps. All right. We have a guest on today, so we've got some Minnesota stories to go through, and we should highlight a few things. You went to Beta MN, right,
Phil? Yeah, it was another good event. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see what was going on, but another well-attended event over, I think it's Wollner Design. I really was intrigued by a couple of them. I think the bar jar thing, which was, you know, I feel like this was an idea that Cam and Grosshead and Gary, why do I always forget Gary's last name from Best Buy? It used to be at Best Buy. Gary.
Colling.
Why do I forget Gary's last name?
I don't know.
But anyway, I thought they had a startup similar to this, but this is basically, you know, the ability to start a tab for friends via the internet at various bars, et cetera. So I was intrigued by that one. I also had a chance to catch up with the guys from Look, which is that sort of trunk club play based in Northeast. So and then saw a couple of other folks. There was a company called Alchemy, which is a fitness place, and they've designed their own particular dumbbell kettlebell sort of thing called a torpedo. And so that was kind of interesting. And, you know, the nice thing was it wasn't just all straight up tech, obviously a lot of internet based stuff, but not all straight up tech.
Okay.
So another successful Beta MN, got a nice purple shirt out of the deal too.
Sweet.
That's, you know, you can never have enough swag, right?
That's right.
But meanwhile, Capella is taking over the coding world. Right.
Well, they're going to try.
Right.
Because they're moving into job skill training. And, you know, what I found interesting about this is I've been reading some articles about the death of vocational tech schools.
Really?
And
at the hands of online? Is that the?
Well,
that
no, but just in terms of, I mean, everything from plumbing to bricklaying to, you know, any tradesman activities. Are, you know, there's just no students. Nobody's taking these. That's a sweeping generalization.
Probably, yeah.
But that there's all this buzz about STEM and tech and all of that, and not enough about, hey, we need people that can fix things and build things and work with their hands and create.
Which can't necessarily bode well for our infrastructure, right?
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
Well,
let's code bridge.
Yeah, all those immigrants, they'll take those jobs, right?
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wait, we're going to put a wall up.
Wow, that's right.
Yeah, come on, Tim, man. Come on.
Jeez.
So we just can't have our cake and eat it too. Darn it.
Yeah. Wow. But you know what? Being serious, I mean, it is a problem.
It is. No, seriously, it is a problem.
Yeah.
Though we jest because it's what we do.
Right. But of course, Capella can't do anything but online training because that's what they offer.
Right.
So getting into software coding makes sense.
Right.
Yep. So hey, you skipped over Julio's story this
week. Yeah, I was just going to, yeah, I apologize for that. I actually was going to sort of use it as a segue, but that's okay. Our friend Chuck Olson and his company Visual scored a cool deal with Rhapsody on 360 videos. So it's going to be exciting.
That's very cool.
And we're actually going to have Chuck on next week and talk to him a little bit about that. So
now there's a video in this article from the band that was singing, doing the cover of Let's Go Crazy, Prince's song, down at the First Avenue Memorial. You were there.
Yeah.
Were you there during the filming of this?
No, I think I missed that one. I may have come in a little late, or I was early. That went on for quite some time.
Well,
so,
yeah, exactly.
And I wasn't able to be, I got there right as one group was finishing up. And so I got to kind of sit around waiting for that. But, you know, in that period that I was there in between bands, that's when they did the huge group singing Purple Rain.
So you weren't, you didn't stay till 5 a.m.?
No, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. I apologize.
All right. Just checking.
I do apologize.
Say, if anybody...
Clearly wasn't thinking of you.
Yeah. Say, I just need to mention that, in case anybody's wondering, like, who is this guy talking? I've had a horrendous sinus infection. Nice timing with the beautiful weather. So I just need to explain that that's what's going on with my voice. So...
Yeah, I was going to mention something, but, you know, I've grown accustomed to it, so...
I've grown accustomed to your face.
Your
Yeah.
Bad.
Well, speaking of growing accustomed to things,
Segue.
Scott Lidman and Dan Malin are doing yet another startup after selling Magnet 360 for $50 million.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just got to put that money into something.
Yep. This one's called Lucy. It's a artificial intelligence takeoff. It's called Equals 3 is the name of the company.
Right.
And it's really all about using deep learning for marketing.
Is it a voice thing? Is it a actually speaking to thing?
No.
Because I was reading the article. It was like, you know, you can ask it. And it was like, I'm thinking to myself, is it like a Watson? You know,
it is not.
Okay.
No.
Well, it uses Watson apparently, though.
It's tied into Watson.
Right.
But, you type it in, though. You type in a query. I'm sure.
Yeah, you can't say, "You ready for this?
Hey, Watson,
are you ready for this? Okay. Lucy, you got some splaining to do."
Yeah. Some people may not understand that reference. That was Lucille Ball.
That was not Lucille Ball. That was
Desi Arnaz.
That was a Desi Arnaz.
Oh, yeah. Desi Arnaz. Sorry.
Very bad impression, by the way.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
It was okay.
No, but what's interesting about this...
more early Desi. I'm sorry.
What's interesting about this...
Your Sergeant Schultz is a much better. The said.
Oh, you guys.
From all those wonderfully... inappropriate shows from days gone by. There's nothing like a good show about a prison camp in Germany. I'm telling you.
That's right. And if you get over the air TV, you can watch all of those. They're all on those over the air channels.
Yep, exactly.
Well, yeah, so they're using the Watson technology. And so IBM put that online so that you could, in fact, use the API. And obviously they've done a license deal with IBM on this, so they can obviously use Watson time. But they've obviously set up, systems and applications to leverage Watson's capabilities and its deep learning capabilities. And I'm wondering if this is the first overt application that's been written really leveraging Watson. I'd like to know that. I should send Scott a note.
Yeah, no, there are other people using the APIs
are
for
there?
Various,
okay. Okay.
Various things, yes.
Well, then I'd also like to ask him, are you going to get Scarlett Johansson to be your mascot? Or B, are you going to get in trouble for calling it Lucy because of the film with Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, did you see that film, by the way? I watched it the other day.
It's pretty good.
Not awful. She turns into a computer.
Yeah.
She turns into a flash drive.
Well, I actually really liked it.
Did you really?
It's kind of a spoiler for people.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Could you edit that up front, Steve? Could you put that in front there?
Right.
Sorry. He'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Fix it in post.
But I did think that was I thought that was a good film. It was very interesting.
Yeah, it's okay.
And, hey, any film with Scarlett Johansson is okay by me.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So I think these guys are going to do well with this because there's so many things going on. I mean, you know, the difficulty and like I've said before, it's always easy, if it's, you know, 1990 and you're selling to ophthalmologists, and you want to market to them, you know, there's three magazines that are industry magazines that go to ophthalmologists. And if you're in there and you support the one conference they go to every year, you're good to go. You're covering all the ophthalmologists. Well, now today, especially young ones, they're all over the place, and all the customer possible touch points are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a system that can figure out what people are using and then how to get to them, all bets are off. So I think this could potentially be an interesting solution. So.
Yeah.
But anywho.
Just wanted to give a quick update on the Prince bill. I don't know if you guys. I added a comment over the week because I said last week that it had been tabled when in fact it came off the table early last week. But now the senators have sort of decided not to deal with it this year simply because it was hastily written. And so.
Well, that's good. They got a lot on their table.
Now, why is that? I just can't quite understand why. Let's just wait till the final week to do everything.
Yeah, they're procrastinators.
Are they doing the rest of the year, for God's sake?
No. Come on, you guys know how this works. You wait till the last minute, you throw something in, and then people sign it, or you slip something into another bill. That's how you get stuff passed that, otherwise might get balked. And people won't do it. So
what a pain in the keister.
I know.
What are you gonna do? That's so true. So I just wanted to give a quick update on that. But also, before we leave Minnesota, Target has made Jason Goldberger, who was was he president?
He was president of the Target.com.
Target.com and mobile. So he is now their first chief digital officer. So a CDO.
Yeah, they didn't really define a lot of what that role is going to be.
I'm sure it's online and mobile. So he's been leading that effort for a number of years.
Well, but what about in-store beacons and
maybe.
Various tracking technologies and so forth.
Anything that involves a smartphone, I think, is his beat.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yep.
Sounds about right. So Shall we check in with our
guess who just joined us? How you doing, hey, Rob?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Just terrific. Sorry it took a little bit of time there for us to get connected to you, but we are all on. Steve and Tim and Phil.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Well, tell us like a little bit about VueGo, and we're assuming it's VueGo, right? That's how we're pronouncing it?
Correct. It is VueGo.
Yay.
It's either Vago, VueGo. We've heard several other
variations
as well.
Got it. Well, you guys have been getting a lot of buzz, man. I mean, the press page on your website is incredible. Why don't you tell the listeners, everybody, what VueGo is and what you're offering?
Sure. So VueGo is, at its core, really just an in-vehicle mobile media network that puts entertainment and advertisements and content and things like that in front of passengers in the back of cars. So it's pretty simple at its core. If we take it a couple of steps deeper than that, though, really what we're doing is giving advertisers the opportunity to target passengers based on a known intent. So to give you an example, if I hop in the back of a rideshare vehicle, whether that's an Uber or a Lyft car, and say head to a mall, if I'm a store in that mall, how great of an opportunity would that be to have my advertisement in front of me before I even get to the mall?
Right.
So there's a really good opportunity to influence behavior before it even happens.
Well, and your co-founder, James Belfi, said in that Technori pitch that he gave, that the YouTube video's out there, that we know where they are, where they're going, and often we know why. And so what a great context for being able to deliver stuff that's relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is something that's been going on for a while, to not necessarily in the back of cars, but if you look at, for example, Google, if you're going to Google and you type in a search query, all of those keywords that you typed into that query, advertisers are able to target against. We've just kind of flipped the script. We don't really have a search query. We have ride data. So like where you're being picked up from, where you're being dropped off at, the time of day, day of week, things like that, that you can really target against as an advertiser.
Yep.
Is the content streaming from the cloud, or is it on the devices itself?
Yeah, so the content's all dynamically served up from the cloud. So one big differentiation point between us and, like, say, traditional taxi TV is that traditional taxi television would be put on a loop. So there might be only 10 ads on a reel that just gets played over and over and over again, right, which is why you see, like, Jimmy Fallon, like, 15 times before you get to where you're going to go, which is awful for everybody. And so our server will estimate how long that particular trip will take before it even happens, and we'll serve up the right amount of content for that trip, for that duration of the trip. So if we estimate it's going to take, you know, 20 minutes, we'll serve up 20 minutes worth of content.
Boy, that's got to get spendy, though, with if you're streaming constantly.
Yeah, we do a couple of interesting things with caching and things like that to help reduce some of that bandwidth usage, but there's certainly some bandwidth involved.
Wow. And so tell us about the genesis of Viewgo. I mean, so you guys founded it here in Minneapolis. And I mean, did you just get together for coffee one day and go, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we did advertising in Uber and Lyft?
Yeah, surprisingly not that far off from that.
Really?
So okay. James actually moved to Chicago a handful of years ago, and he lives in Los Angeles right now, but he moved to Chicago to get a job at a digital ad agency. And he was new to the city, didn't know it. So he figured what better way to learn the city than, you know, my spare time drive for Uber or Lyft. And so he did that. And soon after, he had a friend of his who owned a restaurant ask him, hey, like, while you're out driving around, why don't you put these paper menus in the back of your car just to see what happens? And so we said, sure, I'll do that. Doesn't cost me anything to do that. And sure enough, around lunchtime and dinner time, people in the back of the car were saying, you know, this menu looks pretty good. This food looks pretty good. How about you just drop me off at that restaurant instead of where I was going before? And so, you know, he kind of put his digital marketing hat on, gave me a call, and we kind of hashed through the ideas and the details, brought the rest of the team on board. We have four guys that work at Viewgo, and went from there.
Wow.
So let's talk a little bit about the pushback you're getting from Uber and Lyft. How are you overcoming that? Because there is the concept of, you know, Uber and Lyft is a different experience than a cab, and you know, being fed advertising is not something that Uber riders are interested in. What kind of pushback are you getting from those services? I know a lot of them are discouraging it, but I don't know if they're actually out and out banning it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of ways you can kind of look at that. I'll address that first, then I'll kind of see where, you know, where our positioning is on some of that. For Uber and Lyft, fundamentally, there's, you know, I'm not sure if you guys have been following the news recently, but there's been a number of lawsuits, class action lawsuits against them, suggesting that drivers are actually employees, not independent contractors. Right. The reason why we can exist is because those drivers are all independent contractors. They're all 1099. Independent contractors. So in theory, they're all running their own independent transportation business and are free to make money the way they choose to. You know, a better way to look at it is, you know, they're just using Uber or just using Lyft to get leads for their business versus actually working for Uber or working for Lyft. And the courts have agreed with that, which is obviously very favorable for Viewgo too.
Right.
You know, when these drivers are able to freely use us, because obviously if they're employees, then Uber will have some level of control over what they can and can't do in their car. So that's reason number one why they can't do that. But for us, from our perspective, it doesn't really matter. And the reason why is because if we look at where transportation was, say, 10 years ago, you know, people would buy a car at a car dealership. Today, people will, you know, order a car on Uber or Lyft. And in 10 years from now, you'll have a self-driving car, whether that's Uber or Lyft controlled or your own independent car. The whole experience has been changing from a driving experience more to a riding experience. And when you do that, you shift the focus away from the physical activity of driving to something else. And that something else very easily is a, you know, very valuable audience for advertisers to target against. It's a very compelling audience for content providers to target against. And so that's kind of where we've envisioned things, you know, 5-10 years on the road kind of heading.
You know, I'm looking right now at your pricing page, which goes through the monthly rates and so on, the starter plan, the basic plan, and so on, and so I'm seeing on here 500 minutes of ad time, 1,000 monthly views, So if I'm a Chinese restaurant in a mall, and I want to advertise to people who are coming to the mall, can I also specify times of the day? So, you know, I don't want to advertise at 2:30 in the afternoon. I might want to do it around lunchtime.
Right.
So, and then if somebody watches an ad, when it says 1,000, I'm just confused on what the 500 minutes of ad time means and the 1,000 monthly views and how that's broken up.
Yeah. So our pricing page, we actually offer a few different ways to buy ads into Viewgo. those subscription packages you're looking at, that's really for local businesses that might not have a ad agency or media buyer that they're working with.
Gotcha.
To get access to Viewgo, because we want Viewgo to be open for really any business that wants to reach an advertiser, or I'm sorry, a passenger in the back of a car.
Got it.
We don't want it to be limited to just say like major brands, which is where a lot of traditional out of home media space has been reserved for. It's not exactly the easiest thing to buy, but as far as that goes, yeah, if you're a Chinese restaurant in a mall and you want to target somebody, you know, going to the mall over your lunch period, yeah, you can certainly do that. We sell based on time versus impressions, because obviously if you have a 30-second video ad and somebody else has a 27-second video ad, it's you know, not necessarily apples to apples between the two for straight up pricing.
Yeah.
So we base it on time as opposed to strictly just impressions. And that's kind of the way we target it. Most people will use a 30-second video ad. That's something that we have found. So that's where we get the, you know, 500 minutes or 1,000 views for that particular package from.
Got it. Well, that was one of the things that really excited me about this when James pinged me by email or through our contact form, was as I started poking around and looking at it, I thought, you know, one of the issues has always been, you know, for the over urinal advertising or the you know, the in-car, you know, all of the national or even regional advertising sorts of opportunities that existed, there wasn't an easy on-ramp. And so obviously you guys want to go after, and you just sort of alluded to the fact that you do have programs for national brands and ones that want to, you know, reach the 500,000 or more drivers that are out there that are carrying people around. But there's an on-ramp for, you know, people with organizations that might have, you know, 8 locations in one metro area, so that they can target specific riders in those areas and so on. And it's affordable.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things we wanted to make sure was that we offered, you know, packages that were reasonably priced. The average, for example, small, medium business in the U.S. spends something like only $300 a month on advertising, and it's not a huge budget, obviously. So we have to work within that framework.
Very nice.
Cool. Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it takes off. Are you ahead of plan, on plan? What are you feeling?
Right now, we are on plan. You know, last year, so Viewgo is only about a year old. We were founded in February of 2015, so I guess we're a couple months past that. You know, last year we built our minimal viable product and brought it to market. Had an open beta of, you know, summer of last year and also into the fall. We had approximately 5,000 rideshare drivers across the country sign up, so we had quite a few drivers sign up. Now we are kind of in the, all right, we took some lessons learned from that open beta, and now we're looking to grow from there. And we're focused primarily in Los Angeles right now, and we're hopeful to be expanding into Minneapolis here pretty quick over the next couple of months.
Outstanding.
That's great. Well, I want to just also mention under your benefits, you do have that graphic of the top destinations. And I did notice that destination number 5 is bars. Number 8 is fitness clubs. Number 9 is doctor's offices and hospitals. And I just found that kind of amusing. But that the first one was home, residential addresses that people want to go home.
Certainly.
Workplace is number 2, tourist destinations number 3, restaurants and food for number 4. So
all of that data is actually from our open beta last year. We had over 10,000 trips on our platform
really
during our open beta period. And that data comes directly from that our own data from that open beta period. And something that struck me as interesting was that, you know, originally before we kind of got into the weeds of this, I assumed that people would take rideshare similarly to how they would treat a taxi cab, which would be primarily, you know, very specific types of destinations. But as you can see from the infographic, it's really all over the board.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I sorry, Tim and Phil, I got to ask one more question.
Go, that's all
before
right.
Before we let you go, Rob. So one of the things I've been thinking about after listening to that James, when he did the Technori pitch about, you know, we know where they are, where they're going, and often we know why. And I haven't personally kept abreast of customer analytics and what's going on with big data and so on like you have, Tim. But Rob, I'm wondering, are you also able to create a customer profile over time? And so as people interact with your system, just start to build a profile about them and maybe get other data that you can get through, you know, credit card company APIs or things of that nature, and at least make some assumptions about who they are.
Yeah, that's certainly something we are keeping our you know, finger on the pulse of. We want to make sure that we don't, I guess you could say, freak people out too much, because ultimately, you know, an advertisement on your computer or on your smartphone or something like that is one thing, but seeing an ad targeted to you in a real space can get a little scary. So we're trying to be very cognizant of that fact that it certainly is something that we would like to get towards, but there's a process to get there, and we want to make sure we have a level of comfort and trust with our passengers before we dig too deep into that area.
Right. Well, you guys have come a long way, man. I'll tell you, it's really looks good, and you've really dotted a lot of I's and crossed a lot of T's here. So now all you have to do is make sure autonomous vehicles are on your radar so that we can get free access to superchargers or something at some point in the future.
Right. And what we're excited about with autonomous cars is, you know, in 10 years, like I was saying a little bit earlier, you know, if you order a car today, like on Uber or Lyft, you know, in 10 years, it'll probably be a self-driving car. And if you opt into advertisements, how cool would that be if that trip is entirely free or at least subsidized?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
That's very
fantastic.
Cool. Well, listen, best of luck to you. Keep up the great work. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Take care, Rob.
Thanks. Bye, Rob.
Bye.
Excellent.
So, yeah, exciting stuff going on there. I think that's kind of interesting. I am interested to see the pushback on you know, ads inside Uber and Lyft and how that plays out.
I think they're going to have they're both going to have a really tough time trying to tell people that are drivers that own their own cars and so on specifically what they can and cannot do.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it's contract labor.
No,
so
I know.
Basically, they can define, you know, what you have to do or can or cannot do to work for, you know, as a contract employee. So,
right.
I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I very rarely use Uber simply because I'd like to drive, but I can't imagine people
really
see ads.
Well, I got to tell you an interesting story. So my bride, who has become quite technical over time, and she travels, you know, 120,000 miles a year. Our daughter, Liz, started hammering on her about, you know, Mom, really, seriously, you should take Uber instead of a cab. And Michelle was always kind of nervous about it and so forth. And so she said, you know what, I'm going to do it when I get to High Point, North Carolina for the furniture market, because it's a town I know, it's a place I know, and I know all the streets and all that. And she started using Uber, so she took it from the airport, from Greensboro, into her hotel, and she started using it. And she basically spent less than half of what she normally would spend on cabs.
Right.
And she goes, Steve, it was a fabulous experience. And she said, I'm, and now she's done it in New York and she's done it in Chicago and someplace else and is absolutely loving it. And so, you know, there's a ever expanding market that these guys haven't access to, I think. So that'll be cool. Oh, yeah, hey, we should talk about other, top tech stories, because Google I/O happened.
Google I/O was the big sort of the big buzz this last week, and you know, watched quite a bit of it. And you know, first got to do a little bragging that Android Instant Apps was demonstrated on stage at the keynote and use the Tasty video app for an example of showing how Instant Apps works, and it was great. So it was just really cool to see the product that we built here in Minnesota showcased in that way.
That was cool.
And our
lead
Android guy was walking around. Wow, that was great! It was live, and we did it on KitKat.
Oh man! Well, I watched part of the keynote and live, and which I normally don't do,
right?
But I had an opportunity mainly because I had this horrific sinus infection, and
yeah,
it was basically,
what else are you gonna do, right?
Oh my god! But yeah. But I thought it was very interesting, and you know, they announced, of course, Google Home, a voice activated device that already knows who you are because of all the interaction. If you have a Google account, you've done a lot.
Amazon calls it, Echo.
Yeah.
Looks better though, actually.
Well, it does.
You look at the ecosystem that Google has, it's much richer than what Amazon has.
Much richer.
They could do a lot with this. And that demo video was very interesting because, you know, they have it turning on lights and adjusting your thermostat and all sorts of stuff.
Well, and that's the one thing, you know, when I used to watch Star Trek when I was a kid, you know, they talked to the computer, I remember thinking how awesome that was. And the one thing that we didn't know was maybe that Starfleet was eavesdropping on them. And so, you know, there is nervousness about, from privacy advocates, about having the Amazon Echo or the Google Home or the Samsung Smart TV in always on listening mode. Mm-hmm. Because that microphone's live.
Yeah.
And somebody taps into that mic or is allowed or given access to that mic, now they've got access to the house. Not that they can't get in anyway, but so there is, it's going to take some time, I think, for all of us out here in user land to get comfortable with this stuff. But still, I thought Google did a great job on the stuff that they're doing, you know, the Android apps and the Play Store coming to Chrome. Oh,
what did you think about this Daydream VR deal?
Yeah.
I mean, hats off to them for pushing the envelope. Why don't you explain a little bit what it is?
We were kind of anticipating that it was going to go, you know, since they had cardboard, that it was going to be called plastic. But
yeah. Well, but Tim, one of the things I'm interested in, and you would know because I'm sure that you dug into this, was about the ability to run Android apps without downloading them. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's the technology. It's similar in a way to the way that the handoffs work within iOS, where you've got the ability to intercommunicate between applications. You're limited on the iOS side, and the ability of Android apps now to be modularized, so you download a piece of an app to get certain bits of information out of it, is an interesting one because it doesn't require you to just continuously have the other app that you're being sent to on your device,
or
have to download it. So it's taking a module of another app that you may not have on your phone that's called from the first app and delivering it. So from a developer standpoint, though, I'm sure Phil, you're looking at this with all of the apps that you do at BuzzFeed. So
sure. So it's exciting stuff. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. The one thing that about IO that is the keynote that's getting some heat is this crowdsourcing of the, what do we call N?
Android N.
You can help name Android N.
That was announcing it said, you know, please don't call it like Android McAndroid Face or something. I mean,
Really not a, you know, I think he should probably try a different letter, this for a different letter, but anyway.
Yeah, but N, you know, equals N is null.
Yeah.
Or, you know, as a variable. So
you want to call it null?
Yeah, Android null.
That's Android null.
That's a good marketing.
It's usually after a dessert. So right. What desserts with
how about Nilla?
Nilla. Nilla wafer.
Nilla wafer.
Yeah. There you go.
So and as a frosting on the cake for them, speaking of vanilla.
I gotcha.
Chromebooks outsold Macs for the first time in the US. Yep. That was pretty.
That's not surprising, since the average Chromebook probably is $250.
Yeah,
and the average Mac is probably $800 or $900.
Right. We talked about that at Lakeville School District. We're buying a lot more Chromebooks now.
You can buy a lot more of them.
You can buy a lot more, and it's just, and the technology. Yes, you say what you will about Windows or, you know, whatever system is running on it compared to the Mac experience, it's really gotten so much better that it's more than acceptable in an education environment.
Well,
so
I agree totally.
You've got complete control over it too. So it's easy to manage.
And the price point is so much better. And it's always amazed me. Apple has always had this great dedication to education. Yet when it comes to offering, price point and price breaks, just don't do it. It's insane. And it's only becoming, it's now becoming economically more feasible just to leave Apple behind.
Well, and now with Android apps coming more and more to the platform, I think that'll kind of fill in the gap. So you can run Skype and other applications from within the Chromebook.
Agreed.
Well, I remember reading an article back in, probably 2004, and it was he's a former Xerox PARC researcher, Alan Kay, who was at Apple. He was maybe he's still an Apple fellow, but he said the future is port 80. And I remember scratching my head and going, "What?" and reading the article. And of course, port 80 is where, that's the web browser port. That's the primary HTTP port. And what he was talking about was the fact that because of the need to close ports and firewalls and all of that, that having stuff happen over port 80 is the way to do, all of these wonderful things. And when you think about WebRTC, the real-time communications, to do Google Hangouts or video and screen sharing, pardon me, and all sorts of things, the Chromebook just makes so much sense. I mean, it really does. Yep. As a utility box.
It does. It's very stable. We've had one for a couple of years now, and it's rock solid.
Yep. Yep. Well, okay.
So let's talk about the cool thing of the week.
Yeah, cool things of the week.
Cool. Let's start with, is it Steve? We never start with you, do we?
Never. Never. I always feel bad. Okay, so my cool thing is Purism's Librem 13. I think it's Librem or Librem. It's a laptop that protects your rights.
Wow. And
essentially,
my laptop does not protect my rights at all.
It's totally tinfoil hat-ish. Boy.
Well, ooh. It is totally, first of all, it looks cool because it's all black graphite. But they're using the Pure OS. But you can have Cubes. You can order it with Cubes OS, which is a completely cordoned off operating system. And so, like Google Chrome, has each tab is its own discrete space. And so, if one tab crashes, it doesn't bring down the whole browser. Cubes OS keeps everything discrete, so that even if you are infected with malware, it's only going to happen in one area. And that you can't get access to the entire operating system. It's really fascinating. And I kind of configured one with CubeOS and a little bit of extra RAM, I think maybe 16 gigs of RAM or something, and it was like $15.99. And so it's not very expensive either. So it was pretty interesting.
Well, this is Cory Doctorow's next computer.
I bet it is. He's been running. Well, he's been running Linux for years.
Yeah, he used to get the IBM ThinkPads,
right?
And then never agreed to the thing. It just immediately image some sort of Linux onto it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. So, that's exactly what he'd do.
Yeah.
So is this a crowdfunded thing or is this built?
No, this is built. Okay. No, you can order it right now.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like they did raise a bunch of money.
Yes, they did. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Last year, they did.
Gotcha.
Interesting. It is cool.
Very cool.
Phil.
Fast.
I see what you did there, Phil.
I love this. I love this. Because I saw this earlier this week, and I thought, you know, this is not a bad thing. This is Netflix has launched its own speed test website. It's called Fast. Basically, it's a quick way to see what kind of download speed you're getting. You know what I really like about it is it's just dead as simple. You know, you don't have to pick a ping point or anything like that. Right. It just basically opens up and boom, there it is. So those of you that love minimalist design and sort of a material design look, check out fast.com and see what kind of internet speeds you've got going right now too.
And if you're tech support for senior citizens, this is perfect. Let's go to fast.com and then read the number back.
Yes. Tell me the big number that you see in front of you.
The enormous number.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's my cool thing of the week.
Cool. And Tim.
So this was an interesting product that I saw a few weeks ago and stuck in the notes, but have not pulled it out. It's called Tribee, and it's using Amazon's Alexa technology, but it's taking it a couple more steps. It acts as its own, of course, Bluetooth speaker, just like Amazon Echo does. But it also has a little screen, so you can put notes on it. It's integrated with its own smartphone app. You can use it as a speakerphone. So if you have little kids, you can pre-program your phones and then teach them how to push a simple button to call you. It's just kind of an interesting idea. A little spendy, though, at $199. It's a nice, interesting idea of extending the Alexa technology. And they can, of course, use that because Amazon has published the APIs.
So is it just me, or did they just find a whole bunch of old speak and spell cases and said, hey, let's put something in?
It does look a little Fisher Price.
That's exactly what they did. Yeah.
It looks very Fisher Price.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I'd want, or my wife would want, one of those hanging on the kitchen wall.
No, I don't think so.
But, it looks pretty good. I mean, it's not terribly bad.
I think the form factor could be better, but it looks
Gen 1.
It could be like a scale too. It looks like a scale. Somebody grab it and stand on it. So,
I'm going to get the Google one, depending on how much it costs, of course. But this is an interesting alternative if you want to have the
Google Home thing. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, the Google Home. Yeah, I'm going to get one of those. Yeah, as soon as they come out.
Huh. Okay.
Very cool.
Do we know the price point on the Google Home, guys?
We don't. But I assume it's going to be in the range of $179 to $199, which is what these things go for, apparently. Unless you're a member of Amazon Prime and you can get a deal for $99 occasionally.
Yeah.
I think I will.
Which will be tempting the next time they have one of those $99 things. I may actually pick up an Echo. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'm still waiting for the Dot to come out, or become available other than on Amazon Echo.
Well, don't you have to have an Echo to order a Dot?
Yes, you do. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you could have, Phil, but you screwed it up by sending it back.
Yeah, but why would I need the Dot if I already had the Echo? Really? Come on. Think about it.
Well, it's an extension of the Echo.
Stop arguing, you two.
Okay.
All right. Any new events coming up?
Not really. WordCamp's going on today and tomorrow. And so if you don't have tickets, too bad because they're gone.
Your story walking. Oh, I meant to tell you guys I was at Maker Faire last week, too.
How was that?
I forgot. It was fun. It was cold as hell, but it was fun. Interesting to see all of the different technologies and lower tech stuff. I mean, there was everything from lathe work to just art and leather work and things like that. So it was very cool to be there. I picked up a couple of small little things that I found interesting. So another great event. I just hope it's warmer for them next year because it was bitter cold. So bummer. Anyway, sorry about that.
Well, great.
I digress.
Well, we will talk about other events and other things next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Take care.
Damage to my soul, 'cause you took me down so easy.